Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Ken Edwards with the NCL. Good morning to Ed Maher with the NCL. How are you?
I'm great, Ken. How are you?
I'm excellent. Excellent. My bracket is not as excellent.
Yeah, my bracket's shot, but it's it happens every year, so I'm never surprised anymore.
Yeah. I did all right for a little bit, but yeah, no go. And no Phil today, right?
Phil's not here.
Phil's working. I don't know where Phil is.
I think Phil might be working on spring break.
Oh, is that right?
It's about that time of year.
It is that time of year. So we got a bunch of stuff today. All right. And I have, Ed, a barely legal.
Again?
Yeah.
That's two weeks in a row.
I'm on a roll.
Okay.
I want to talk about Starbucks and developments there. I want to talk about some strikes that are going on. And then we have the great local 727 Teamsters coming in to talk about what I would consider an enormous win, and their contract negotiations going on with Brookfield Zoo.
Yeah, some updates on an ongoing issue that we've
been covering for some time. Let's start with what I think is good news coming out of Starbucks land, and
that is
Starbucks Workers United. I think is the name of the union. Mm-hmm. Decided to try and jumpstart negotiations. And the way they did it, I wasn't necessarily a fan of. They negotiated against themselves. So they had initially said, we have a floor of $20 an hour, and they decided to lower that floor to $17.
Right.
That's a pretty big jump. But apparently, the jump was enough to get Starbucks to at least agree to come back to the table. Now, that being said, you know, I'll believe it when I see it with a first contract, but at least some progress is being made, and I believe they are going back to the table.
Yeah, that's a tough move, though, when it's like, we want 20 crickets. We'll take 17. Like, we're interested.
Yeah.
Ouch.
And I mentioned this, like, you know, the starting wage for McDonald's in my neighborhood's 18.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I'm never in favor of negotiating against yourselves, and it's a very common tactic that management uses, where the union will proffer, you know, an offer, and management will just say no, and don't come back with a counteroffer. They'll just say no. Mm-hmm. So it leaves the union in a tough position, because you can say, hey, you're really not negotiating in good faith. You can't just say no. You have to at least negotiate in good faith, right? And say, why is the answer no? Or what can you afford? Or make a counter, or whatever. But, you know, what Starbucks has done is just completely stonewalled, in my understanding. So, finally, there is some movement. I'm still not 100% sure whether I can go back to Starbucks or not.
I think the answer is still probably not.
You say no?
I think.
I don't know. I asked on Facebook.
And what did Facebook tell you?
I don't get the answer. So I can go back to Starbucks, or I don't, or I was just unclear.
I guess if they're negotiating, you know, at least it's a defensible thing to do.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's always weird. Like, you boycott something and put them out of business, but they're trying to get a contract to get more business. I don't know. So that's that. We have a barely legal.
Let's hear it.
You want to hear it?
They're very popular. We've been hearing a lot from our listeners.
People
on these
seem
barely
to like
legals.
It. Ready?
I am ready.
All right, here we go. Here's the barely legal. There was a case called CMEX, and it was decided during the Biden administration by the Labor Board, and basically it was really, really kind of cool, game-changing, which said that if an employer commits various unfair labor practices during the course of organizing campaign or before the election, you don't even need to go to election. Boom, union's automatically recognized.
Right.
All right. Really cool. Big move, bold move by the labor board, finally doing something in favor of labor. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, actually doing something. And guess what happened?
That part of it got struck down.
It was overturned.
Yeah.
A federal court in wherever, 2-1, said, no, the National Labor Relations Board overreached because they shouldn't be able to tell you what to do when it comes to labor relations. That should be up to the courts. Like, right. Wait, what? Here's the labor board tasked with, you know, remedies and, you know, the whole, you know, spectrum of labor. And the court said, no, you overreached. That's really our province, and we don't think it's right. So
yeah, I think they're expecting to see other circuits around the country to do the same thing here.
And then what's going to happen, of course, is there's going to be a split because one circuit will say, no, it's fine, absolutely, it's good. And then it will wind its way up to the Supreme Court, and there it will die.
a terrible death.
Horrible death. So that's our barely legal for today.
It's sort of, unfortunately, the pattern that we see with the NLRB across everything. In one administration, they'll do a bunch of things that are good for workers. Yeah. In the next administration, yeah, they'll undo those and do bad things. And yeah, it's this weird pendulum where it seems like there's no stability or long-term, like, you know, it's... Workers are just sort of uncertain over the last 20 years.
Well, so I'm glad that you said that, because there seems to be a shift away from, and as well there should be, by the way, and some unions have practiced what we call board avoidance for many, many, many years. Yeah. And that is just like, let's muscle through this, right? Let the best, you know, let the best side win, whoever's got the most power, and avoid the labor board. So right now you're seeing more strikes, right? You're seeing pickets, you're seeing boycotts, bannering, you're seeing things that are outside the purview, or at least trying to get outside the purview of the National Labor Relations Board, because it's relatively useless. It was backed up, it didn't have a quorum, now it's going to, you know, it's going to flip, it's going to be anti-worker. So unions, worker bees, are saying, we don't need it, let's just do it without it. And that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, at some point, you know, once again, it's going to be, we said, it's the law of unintended consequences. Be careful what you ask for. You want to get rid of the labor board. You want to make it, you know, feckless and toothless. Go ahead, because all you're going to do is encourage workers to self-help, i.e. strike, boycott, organize, do what they got to do. And boy, they're doing it a lot lately.
That's for sure.
Right?
Well, I mean, you've got no other choice. If a union is going to go to the labor board expecting anything positive to happen, they're not reading the paper.
Right, and you can't. That's right, you can't. Like, what are you going to do? Wait around for, you know, 6 years or for the next administration to remedy an unfair labor practice? You're going to have to self-help. There's a strike going on right now. I think the company's called JBS. It's a meatpacking plant, and it's the first meatpacking strike in 40 years. 40 years. And they're saying, you know, understaffed, dangerous. This one particular plant supplies 8% of the meat in the United States. And they're on strike right now.
Wow.
Right? So, you know, you got to do what you got to do, but it now, you know, now's the time. So, anyway, listen, we got an interesting show today. We got the Teamsters, as we said, coming on.
Yeah, and we also have John Warner coming in down from Decatur, an IBEW president, who is going to talk about the creation of a new labor council down there.
And some other cool things. So we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. We are stoked today to have John Warner. John is the president of IBEW Local 146. And now, John, you're also, what's your title with the Mid-Illinois Labor Council?
I am the president of the Mid-Illinois Labor Council.
All right. And so the reason this is newsworthy is the following. Labor councils are, explain, John, like what is a CLC, a Central Labor Council?
A Central Labor Council brings the building trades and all the other labor unions together as one big council so we could work out problems together.
Perfect. Okay. And so we're not fighting with each other, or at least trying not to, right?
Right. And you know, if we've got an issue with one or the other, you know, we bring it up. We, you know, bring it up in a conversation and we try to hash it out.
Makes sense. So you guys are new, right? This Mid-Illinois Labor Council is new, correct?
Yes. Right. It just, in fact, we just last night, or yeah, in fact, last night was our first meeting with our new body.
Oh, cool. And how many people are on it?
We have me as the president, Eric Davenport with Steelworkers as vice president, and of course, Amy Roof. She is our secretary treasurer from the Illinois State Fed.
Okay.
And then we've got 2, 3, 4, 5 people on the executive board and 3 on the trustee and 1 sergeant in arms.
So, and then you bring in delegates from all the unions that belong for your meetings.
Yeah, we bring in the delegates by the number of membership they have, sure. And we have a set of how many delegates they get.
So how many members do you guys cover?
A little over 10,000 now.
Nice. And what's the geographic jurisdiction?
Macon County, Piatt County, Shelby County, Moultrie County, and Effingham County.
But you're an actually working electrician, correct?
Correct. I'm an electrician here on staff at Eastern Illinois University.
Oh, yeah? How long have you been there?
Well, that's a very long story.
Okay.
Well. I started out in 2009 being temporary. In 2012, I got on full time. And then a bunch of us got cut. In fact, 483 of us got cut in one day here at Eastern Illinois University.
Oh, my gosh.
A huge number.
Wow.
Yes.
And how'd that get reversed?
Part of it has not got reversed.
Oh, interesting. So you're still down.
Yes, we are still down. They have cut the – I belong to the facility staff, and we still are not fully staffed back. But our problem also now is happening that our numbers of students is going down.
Yep. I've been reading about this all over the country. It's not just you guys.
Well, yeah, it's not just us. We was actually starting to rise back up, but thanks to our presidential person in Washington – he decided to cut visas, which cut our international students.
No question about it. So let's go back to the Labor Council. The Illinois AFL-CIO, right, which is the umbrella organization for most unions in the state, not everybody, but a lot. I'd say almost everybody.
Yeah.
Has decided to sort of start to try and make things more efficient and do some consolidation so there's not so much fracture and a little bit more bang for your buck, right?
Yes, okay. Get a little leaner and meaner.
Okay, good. And but listen,
it's got to be done.
It's got to be done. It makes sense. And you know, it's your concept is no different than the National Coalition of Labor, where unions get together and leverage their economies of scale, work things out, blah blah blah. But it's a coalition of unions, right? That's what a labor council is.
Yeah.
So, you know, besides advocating for your members, right, you're able to get involved, I would assume, in local politics, right? If there's a job that needs to, you know, get pushed through a city council, you guys are there for that, right?
We're here for city councils. We're here for our one Democratic congressional candidate, Nikki Baczynski, that's in our territory, and mm-hmm. we rail for her, and we've got Sue Shear that's out of the state house and Doris Turner that's out of the state house that covers our area, and we work with them.
Right. So you're getting involved in local politics,
yes,
which makes sense, right? You need to. Unfortunately, labor has to be involved in politics.
I'll tell you, when I got in as an apprentice in 93, first year apprentice in 93,
yeah,
politics was not a super big thing, mm-hmm. but now if we do not sit there at the table so we can have our voice, we get lost in their shuffle.
I will tell you this, John, the part of the reason the genesis of the Workers' Mic was to push that Workers' Rights Amendment. And to,
oh, yes.
You know, that was literally, I hate to say it, but kind of like why we started and, you know, obviously blossomed from there. But, you know, labor has to get involved in politics. And don't like talking about politics much on this show, but there is no question that, you know, we need to.
Well, this day and age, I don't see how you can keep away from not talking about politics.
Well, it's interesting, right, in the building trades, because I'm sure down where you're at, you know, half of the members, if not more, voted for Trump.
Oh, yes. I do know when he got elected the first time, our business agent said that 60% of the local voted
for
Trump.
Yeah, I don't
think
that.
No, I think it was probably more than the last time.
I looked at him that night at the meeting because he sits right beside me, and yeah. I said, that number seems a little low to me.
There you go. That's right.
You know.
That's right. So we have voted for our own demise, as labor is doing. And so, but, you know, look, in my humble opinion, there's a silver lining to that. I've said it before, I'll say it again, that because of the attacks on labor and the attacks on federal employees, government employees, the Doges, like all the stuff that's going on. It's woken people up to the fact that, wow, we actually need a union. Like, you know, so there's unionization now in sectors that have never been union, right?
Well,
so,
and hopefully it's awakened a sleeping giant.
I think that's right.
Yeah, I mean, we've all talked for, you know, decades about if we could put jurisdictional issues and little beefs aside, think of, you know, how great and strong labor could be if we all work together. And that's the idea of a central labor council, is getting everybody together to hash out little issues, but figure out what they can help each other with and push in the same direction.
I think that's
exactly. And that was the whole reason I wanted to become president, because I was vice president for 16 years at Decatur Trades and Labor. And, you know, little beefs like this, let's go to the table. Let's bring out this conversation. Let's talk about it. We're not maybe always going to agree on everything, but, sure. You know, it's like I told Tim Dre, I said, I'll take little wins as I can get it, you know, and then we can work from there.
Yeah, listen, I think that, you know, first of all, Illinois is a strong union state, obviously, and we were watching what was going on around us, and, you know, you talked about Rauner and whatnot. You know, I mean, that was a shock to the system here in Illinois. When that guy became governor, we had to fight, and I mean fight, tooth and nail, and labor beat him back. Simple as that. And so, you know, when we have a common enemy, we're very good.
Right? Oh, absolutely.
But when we don't, otherwise we're just fighting amongst ourselves over a skid steer on a job site or something like that. So,
well, and you know, that's little beef like that, that, you know, get over. You know,
yeah, right. Get over, you know, it. Figure it out. Right, figure it out.
There's bigger thing. There's bigger fish to fry.
There's
than
no
just
question about
running
it.
The skid steer.
There's no question about it. We got to go out, and what's our mission in labor? Is to organize the unorganized. That's what we have to do, and that's why, like, I think what you guys are doing is important. I think we have a great leader in Tim Dre at the Illinois AFL-CIO. We have a great staff there, right? Who's his vice president?
Pat Devaney,
right, from the firefighters.
Pat Devaney.
Right. Yeah, just, yes. You know, they have a great staff that they seem like, you're right, getting lean, mean, consolidating where they can. It just makes sense. So kudos to you for what you're doing.
Well, and that's the greatness of this labor council, too, that we've got Amy Roof. She works at the AFL-CIO office under Tim and Pat. So, I mean, it helps us out because she's able to do things and get more information for us since she's there. That really helps us out. And she's willing to help anybody out.
Yeah.
She's a godsend to the labor movement.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. We need a million of those, right?
Yes.
So, John, real quick, you had mentioned something earlier off the air, and that is a scholarship, scholarships, I should say, that you guys just pushed out. Tell us about that.
Yeah. It is the Michael E. Champagne Scholarship. He used to be a business agent for the Roofers Local in Indicator, and he passed away. And him and Amy set this up to hand out scholarship for children or members for college education.
And is it not just college, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it can be for trades, whatever, to further your education, whatever it takes.
And how much did you guys put out? 15,000?
We had 21 people apply, and Amy interviewed all 21 of them, and then we had a committee of six, went over all the applications, and we put out $15,000 last Monday night.
That's awesome. Kudos to you. That's great.
We put out 9 $1,000 scholarships and 12 $500 scholarships.
I mean, that's awesome. I mean, that's real money. And once again, here's something that labor does, right? And they're not tooting their own horn about it. They're not sending out press releases, blah, blah, blah. They just push out scholarships and they just give out money. And
well, and another step to this, you know, we asked them what they wanted to be later on in life. I mean, we had nurses, we had veterinarians, we had engineers, we had one kid wanted to work for aerospace, some of those teachers. You know, this is people that have been under union households.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to send them out to other jobs, hopefully. That can help even more.
And hopefully they'll unionize those jobs.
Exactly.
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense. All right. So listen, we got to wrap up, but thank you so much for being on. John Warner, president of IBW Local 146, as well as the brand new Mid-Illinois Labor Council. Thank you so much, John. We appreciate it. We'll be right back with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Workers' Mic. More show to come. Sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people, just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit HingeHealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Worker's Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN. So, we are stoked today to have the great Teamsters Local 727. Welcome, Teamsters. We have John Coley. John, you're the president, yeah?
Yeah, Secretary Treasurer.
Secretary Treasurer, okay. I always get confused.
It is confusing, I'll admit that.
All right, and then we have a member who we've talked about in the past, and that's Carrie Sapienza, correct?
Yes.
Am I getting that right?
Yes.
And you are what? Who do you work for?
I work for Brookfield Zoo, Chicago.
Okay, wait a second. And you currently are back working for Brookfield Zoo.
Just got rehired.
There we go. All right, we're going to talk about that. And then Sean, what's your last name?
McGough.
McGough. And what? You're a business agent.
Yes, that's correct.
727.
Yes, sir.
All right. So let's talk high level, right? We've been following this for quite some time. The Teamsters fight with Brookfield Zoo for on a number of levels. One, obviously, John, is to get a contract.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Get a contract.
And then we had this termination of how long have you been there, Carrie?
I was before my termination.
Yeah.
33 years.
33 years. And you got fired.
Yes.
And we talked about it. And I forget what their alleged reason for terminating you was. What was it?
They alleged that I had flipped off one of the managers and I got a written warning. And then they alleged that I was involved in a project or a program that I shouldn't have been involved in.
Oh, okay. The usual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Helping out never pays.
And flipping off the boss. Obviously, they had it out for you. And, you know, I got to tell you something funny. When we talked about it back when you got terminated, somehow it made the WGN Facebook page, Ed.
Yeah, hot news.
And within 5 minutes, all of a sudden, these Facebook posts started to pop up against you, Carrie. And
from brand new accounts.
And from I was like, oh my God, wait, maybe she's not that popular. She must have done something wrong. And we start looking at the accounts, like the accounts are 5 minutes old.
Yeah. Cyber warfare coming from Brookfield.
Yeah. So
that's what they just spend their time doing.
Yeah. Geez. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So
when that Facebook post had come up by WGN, we had an online petition for support to get Gary's job back. And within minutes of that going live on the WGN Facebook post, there was hundreds of signatures that came through on the online petition.
That's awesome.
Thank you, listeners, as always.
Absolutely, for sure. So tell us, John, what changed? Like, how did you guys get Carrie's job back?
Well, so we had one arbitration because they were actually two separate ones. One for flicking off your manager, and the other one was asking too many questions. So we had the first arbitration for flicking off your manager, and the zoo tried every dirty trick in the book. They brought up things from Carrie 20 years ago. They basically just tried to disparage her as much as possible. What they couldn't come up with was any video evidence that even though they claimed they had it beforehand, that she actually did it.
Right.
They also couldn't come up with any eyewitness reports at all. So basically, this was a phantom flicking off. And so they knew they were going to lose that. And we were going in to have the second arbitration. Again, dead bang loser.
Yep.
But those dates were interfering with bargaining dates. So we were going to have to spend the last week of April doing nothing but this.
Right.
Right. Doing her arbitration, talking about questions and the vehicle. There was a project concerning a vehicle, and they were going to do that. So our contract is up right now, and they wanted to free up those dates. So in order for us to give them a one-month extension, we had to free up some dates, and so we agreed to settle Carrie for full back pay. So I'm very happy to get this longstanding member back. She's the salt of the earth. She's given her life to the zoo.
There you go. There you go.
Welcome back, Carrie.
I mean, first of all, it's not even that, John, you didn't settle. You won.
Oh, we won.
I mean, there's a difference. You settle, you know, I think infers that there was some meeting in the middle ground, or you gave up some of your back pay, maybe your seniority, whatever. None of that happened. You got full back pay, full seniority, you know, you got overtime pay, right, that you would have worked. And by the way, you know, and John and I were talking about this all the year. If you get into a car accident, right, and these personal injury attorneys, you know, there's a mathematical formula, and it's the damages are three times the amount of your hospital bills, basically, right? Your medical bills. Exactly. So there's a formula. When you get fired from your job and you get your job back, you get your pay, and you're just like, you're made even.
Right.
Right? They don't take into account the fact that, you know, you might have lost your home because you couldn't make the mortgage. Right. Right?
You had to borrow money. Payments, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Right? And so, not an easy thing to do.
Right.
But congratulations. And look, I'll tell you right now, I've said this 1,000 times, this is the benefit of being in not only a union, but a strong union. A union that has resources, that has lawyers, that has business agents, that's going to stand up for their members. Because a lot of unions, like, oh, you know, maybe we should just settle and go away and, you know, maybe get some pay to go or whatever it is. But you guys, you know, always stand strong for your folks. And without a union, you'd be fired. Like, you wouldn't have a job. End of discussion. Because you're an employee at will. With a union, you're not an employee at will. They have to have what's called just cause. And so, Sean, explain what just cause is to the listeners.
Just cause is they have to have a legitimate reason for firing you. And there's actually, what, 7 principles, John? Putting me on the spot.
Yeah, so, so everybody knows he's one of my business agents. So this is a test. Yes, there's 7 principles of cause. Yeah. And also, too, an evidentiary burden. And I think that's something that sometimes people don't see, right? So it has to be more likely than not that she actually did these things and the zoo's got to prove up their case. They can't just throw allegations at her like they did here.
Yeah. Right. And even, by the way, even if she did, let's say they were 100% right. Does the punishment fit the crime, right? Is that worth the termination? And, you know, they call termination capital, you know, industrial capital punishment, which it is. And that's, you know, that's the worst thing that happened to somebody is, you know, you get fired, but in the union world, you have recourse. And without a union, you don't have recourse, right?
Yeah, and I think to clarify, remember the situation, this, what they would call interfering with another project, was somebody asking you for help with something and you helping somebody out. Is that right?
Yes, it was an outside contractor that had said...
Can you give me a hand?
Can you give me a hand? Can you find the title for this equipment that we picked up? And I said, yeah, I'll get it for you.
And that's a terminable offense. That's laughable. And all this started, I mean, there was a new HR person who started up at the zoo around that time, and things just got nasty. Stuff like this started to happen. I had heard the other day or read that that person's no longer there, but this just kind of goes to show when somebody comes in and decides to try to make a name for themselves and shakes up a staff and starts firing people for no reason, it costs the zoo money, it wastes a lot of time, and now he's gone, but the mess is still there for everybody else to have to clean up.
And you guys are in negotiations.
Yeah, we are in negotiations.
How's that going?
Not great, Jen. I'm not, you know, weird. Yeah, exactly. You're dealing with these people. So, you know, we've been fighting for several focused issues. One of them is staffing.
Okay.
We need to be properly staffed to be safe. And, you know, Kerry speaks very well about that. You know, they've gone down on for instance, their carpentry shop. One of the things about Brookfield Zoo that makes it great is that it's unique. They used to have 6 carpenters not 7 years ago, Kerry. Now they're down to 2.5.
Wow.
Now, they are down on animal care specialists, or what the public would call a zookeeper. Mm-hmm. They're too short in primates. They've had several issues there. I'm not going to get into the details, but where they've had some troubles with the gates and, you know, keeping both the animals as well as the animal care specialists safe.
That seems like a big problem.
You don't want the primates running around Brookfield, do you?
I'm pretty sure if you get stuck in the same room, the primate's not just going to stare at you confused.
Well, absolutely. And it's also for the animal's sake. I mean, this is supposed to be about conservation. It's not supposed to be a circus,
the zoo's a not-for-profit, correct?
It's a not-for-profit. They get 82% of their money from government grants as well as different, you know, tax-deductible contributions.
Okay. All right. So hold on. Let's stop right there, right? 82% of the money that comes into the Brookfield Zoo is not from people paying their fee at the door, correct?
Correct.
All right. And it's not from concessions or, you know, selling merchandise, whatever. It's from grants. It's from public-funded taxpayer dollars, correct?
Or foundations,
charitable. But all those charitable contributions are tax-deductible.
Right.
Yeah, it's a government subsidized up the wazoo.
Okay. And you guys are asking for staffing, right?
We're asking for staffing. We're asking to put a limit on subcontracting. Several months ago, they were unhappy with the lawn, how the lawns looked, how green the grass was, even though they have a staff of 19 groundskeepers now that carries back.
Right.
And they wanted to pay True Green to come in and do all that work. And they wanted to do it at $140 an hour. That's not a typo or a mistake. I didn't mean to speak. $140 an hour.
I want to make $140 an hour.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. But, who wouldn't? But
I'll tell you who does. The head of the zoo.
Oh, no, we're going to get into that. So, of course. So, Dr. Mike and the rest of the executive team, you know, the other part that's very important to us is wages.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you look at since the last contract, our wages have grown about 16%. His has grown about by 38.
Wow.
If you look at
and it's 16% of a smaller number, obviously, versus 30+% of a much larger number.
Oh, absolutely.
So, so who's the head of the zoo?
Oh, Dr. Mike Atkinson.
Okay, and he's the doctor of what?
Veterinary science, right. I would think.
Okay.
He's a vet.
Okay. How much does he make?
About $800,000.
$800,000. You hear that?
I mean, I don't begrudge anybody making any money, even though he's making more than half the White Sox organization. But it's about the growth. So like at Brookfield Zoo, their executive staff, their executives, the 10 or 12 people that comprise that,
right,
are about 4.3% of their expenses.
Okay.
At the best zoos in the world, like Omaha Zoo, as well as San Diego Zoo, it's under 2. It's 1.9, 1.8.
Sure.
At Milwaukee Zoo, smaller zoo, so you'd expect it to be a higher percentage that the executives would be paid
because right,
there's fewer animals to feed, fewer grounds to feed. That's 3.5%. So what do you have here, right? So you have – this is all while in the last 4 years, by the way. Their net income was over $60 million.
Wow.
So they are having more and more money going to the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
Their net income is higher. Their animal collection is down. Their union staff is down. And yet executive pay seems to be outpacing our members by double.
That's just – I mean, it's abhorrent, It's terrible.
And they're trying to expand the entertainment lineup with concerts and, exhibits that are about dinosaurs and whatnot. But if it seems like the shift of the zoo is just turning into, like, an entertainment company as opposed to something, that's really focused on animals.
I think that's exactly right. I think – look, if the mission is supposed to be about educating the public as well as conservation – let's do that. Let's not get Nelly to come and play for 1,500 people. Let's talk about endangered species. Let's talk about climate change. Let's talk about health and welfare of the animals, for God's sake.
Right.
Yeah. But you have to, in order to do that, you have to staff it correctly. Have they cried poor, or is it just like, we don't want to give you the money?
So what they'll say is that, one, that their general admissions is down, and that is true. There are fewer people going to the zoo. But as we said before, that's only about 18% of what's coming in.
Right.
And they will say, well, they can't truly afford it. And it's like, well, I disagree. I mean, if you have net income of what it is, these are all public documents, by the way. They have to file 990. You find this on ProPublica in like 5 seconds.
Right.
Perhaps maybe you shouldn't be increasing your own salary as much as you are.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't need the net income of $60 million. Maybe you don't need to hoard as much money. You're not spending it on more animals.
Right.
You're not spending it on conservation. What you end up doing is you're spending it on Nelly and yourself.
It's being operated like a private equity rather than a nonprofit zoo.
So, John, who votes on executive compensation? Is there a board, or how does Dr. whatever his name is give himself $800K? How does that happen?
So there is a board of trustees that the zoo is under.
Okay.
And there's other different appointments, and obviously the county's involved because it's all public land, right? So something else we need to understand about the zoo is that all 215 acres belongs to Cook County.
Ah, I didn't know that.
In the forest preserve.
Okay.
And so they are rent free.
Got it.
A lot of the capital improvements are, that's where you get your government grants.
Interesting.
And so, it's a long way of saying that what they continue to do is just like any other company, you put people on the board that the CEO can take care of,
sure,
and the CEO take care of the board. You have these executive compensation committees. Right. And mm-hmm. What do? They vote on Dr. Mike's compensation. And guess what happens at? They get their pictures in, pro zoo media. They get good publicity. They obviously have donated to the zoo, but they get business back.
I love these executive compensation committees.
Right.
I mean, that is the biggest joke in the world. It's like, listen, it's very simple. Just see what everybody else makes out there and pay yourself something accordingly, right? See what like what the executive compensation is for the Bronx Zoo. That's what everybody should be as a total.
Right? How many non-executives do you think are on the executive compensation committee?
Does the union have a seat on that committee?
Yeah, pretty sure those folks would be
about the worker bee compensation committee?
Now you're talking.
Well, that's the union.
That is
right?
The union.
That's,
yes.
That's your job, and your job is to go out. So when does the contract expire?
So now it expires on May Day, May 1st at noon.
May Day, love it.
And
okay.
So we have several different negotiation sessions up, and we are going to hold the zoo accountable.
Good.
I mean, at the end of the day, we used to be okay with 3-4% wage increase because the zoo is non-for-profit.
Right.
And the zoo was out there doing a good mission. Yep. It doesn't seem like they're doing such a good thing anymore.
It's tough to swallow, 2.5%, 3.5%, 4%, whatever that number is, of a smaller number when you're looking across the table at somebody that's paying themselves that much money. If everybody was altruistic and said, hey, listen, it's not for profit, I love what I do, I'm not here to make a ton of money, and let's all share the pie, whatever that case, great, then we're all in this together. But it has become adversarial when it doesn't need to be and it shouldn't be, especially for not-for-profit, especially for the fact that I didn't know this, that it's owned by, the land is owned by municipality, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Taxpayer money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It's the people's land.
It's the people's land, and the zoo is supposed to be for the people's
That's
benefit
right.
and the animals.
That's
and
right.
so instead of pumping more money into the blue-collar economy of Cook County,
yeah.
it seems like they're doing something different.
Mm, interesting. All right, listen. Thank you guys so much for coming in. Carrie, congratulations on getting your job back.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Very excited.
Yeah, you should be. And let that be a lesson learned to those folks that think that they can fire somebody that's in a union, and a strong union like 727, without just cause, because you can't, right? And so you're a perfect example of it. John, we wish you well in negotiations. You let us know what goes on, right?
Will do, absolutely.
All right, listen, thank you so much. Local 727, we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. We're going to wrap up, Ed, but a couple of quick stories. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, check this out. Right here in Ottawa, Illinois, not far from us, mm-hmm. okay, in Local 150 jurisdiction, there's a company called Ottawa Storage LLC, and I think they're building a storage unit.
Right.
All right? The entire job, from beginning to end, is not good. And when I say not good, I mean not union.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, this guy that owns this company came to the building trades in Ottawa or wherever it was and said, oh, hey, I'd like to build union, can you help to get some zoning passed, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and they were like, sure. We give us a PLA, project labor agreement, and then, we'll help you all we can. And he's like, I don't know about that. And then sure enough, turns around and says, yeah, the whole job is going to be non-union. So
wow.
He's bringing people in from out of the area, right? And, what shocks me is that he's still able to get non-union, but they're like farmers that will buy a piece of equipment and, run a little tiny mini company, non-union.
Yeah.
It's just like, the bottom of the barrel, in my humble opinion.
It sounds like they really burned him by asking him to, keep his word. You're going to build union if we help you.
Yeah.
So here, sign this paper that says you'll build a union.
But he didn't. I'll show you guys. Yeah, and he wouldn't. I don't think they went but here's the thing. Ottawa, what are you doing? Why are you letting people come in from out of town? They're going to take that money, take those wages, and go back to wherever they are and spend the money.
Well, I feel like this story is not finished yet.
I think that's right.
There'll be another chapter. When we had Brian Anderson in the other day from Champaign, the head of the electricians,
yeah.
we were talking about the sort of the frontier.
Yeah.
And you can count on local skilled men and women to be put to work on these projects. But there's always forces kind of outside trying to bring in. Down there, it was workers from Tennessee
yeah.
trying to bring them in. And they'll test the gates and test the fences, and you've got to show them that the community is behind this movement of local people, skilled people. So hopefully they're able to do that down in Ottawa and turn this around.
And I think that, Ottawa is a working-class town.
For
and
sure.
It's not like that they don't have the workforce to do these jobs, right, and then want to do the jobs.
Right.
So shout-out to Lance Yednock. Local
I think Lance should be Listener of the Week.
Listener of the Week for sure. Local 150 business agent, former state rep.
That's right.
Correct? I think he actually was a business agent, then a state rep, then back to business agent.
Yeah.
I think that's a long career.
He's got a lot. He's had a lot of hard jobs.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be Lance at the moment. But he is, really like working really hard. And some of these jobs that are going on out in his area, Ottawa and in that neck of the woods, are, they'll build union here in Chicago like a Chipotle, but they'll go out there and build non-union.
Right.
So, it's really tough. And I would call on the citizens of Ottawa and the mayor and the board, get involved. Keep these jobs local. That's where they should be, right?
That's for sure. I mean, companies will build cheaper non-union if where they can. So yeah. We have to remind them, you can't do that here.
Yeah.
Because they're not charging less for the project. They're just pocketing more money when they they exploit the workers. So
the taco at Chipotle is not going to be less money because they use non-union labor.
That's
right?
For sure.
Yeah, they just made more money.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. All right, listen. Thanks to Local 727.
Yep.
Thank you to John Warner and everybody that supports the show and comes on and talks about interesting things. We appreciate it. We got the end of the – I think we got one more week before the Final Four, right?
Let's check in with Tony on sports.
Tony says it's April 6th.
April 6th. All right. Yeah, thank you, Tony.
That's a Monday. There you go.
We'll give him some overtime for that. I'm just kidding, Tony.
No overtime for you. We will be back next week with more of The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Worker's Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Worker's Mic, visit WGNradio.com.